It's time once again for the Gaming Gang Extra, proudly sponsored by Victory Point Games, where the gameplay is the thing. On this edition, Elliot and Jeff talk with J-Man and Rick Ivansek, the organizers of the upcoming Phoenix, Arizona VolCon. Jay and Rick will tell us what to look forward to as we get closer to the convention date. So Elliot and I are joined by J-Man and Rick Ivansek, who are putting together VolCon, a convention in the Phoenix Valley that's coming February. How are you doing today, gentlemen?
Doing great. Our big event is due February 25th and 26th of 2012 at the Phoenix Convention Center.
That's correct.
And what do you have planned for VolCon?
Wow, where to begin? It will encompass everything from tabletop miniatures, role-playing games, card games like Magic the Gathering.
Board gaming is going to be covered pretty healthily. We're going to actually have a pretty healthy, and you might have said this already, but healthy RPG presence as well. And there's a lot of hybrid games that are out there now, too. They're some of our favorites, you know, where they're kind of a board game, kind of a miniatures game, or kind of an RPG, kind of a miniatures game. Really, our goal is to cover the entire spectrum and to be able to create an event that will expose people who maybe play one or two of these things to the broader range of what's out there for them. We kind of feel that there's two ways to grow the hobby. One is to expose new people to it and get them excited and get them playing. And the other one is to also grow the playability of the people who are in the hobby. They may not even know they're in the hobby. They may have played Pokemon as a kid and now they play Magic the Gathering. Well, they need to see Dust Tactics and Wings of War and Alhambra and all the array of things that are out there so they can get playing more things.
I only play Pokemon, so I wouldn't know about any of those.
Yes, I just started myself. Quite classic. Can I ask, where did you guys get the name VolCon?
Well, we wanted to go with a Roman theme, so we basically picked the name of Vulcan, the god, and since every convention in the United States, or the world for that matter, ends in con, that was just the easiest connotation for a name for us that's Roman-themed.
Yeah, and Vulcan seemed like a good god to base the convention on for a pretty broad variety of reasons, but the real big ones were, you know, he was sort of the armorer and inventor of the gods. And so when you look at the gaming hobby, a lot of it centers around wargaming in some way, shape, or form. You know, D&D, you might not be in an army, but you're at war with monsters. You know, Magic, you're battling each other. Even in board games, you know, you're kind of at odds with each other. Even in the cooperative ones like Shadows Over Camelot, you're knights, you're warriors. So having the Roman god of armor and weaponry and things like that just seemed like a really appropriate god to pick.
Regardless, board games, role-playing games, obviously miniatures games, there's some sort of conflict or confrontation. So you can see we're picking that god would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, we could have gone with something like Mars, but Mars Con almost sounds like we're bringing candy bars to prisoners or something. So
exactly. You know,
the VolCon just worked better.
Even though everybody seems to immediately makes the Star Trek connection, it has nothing to do with that at all.
Yeah, and that's been one of the early challenges with using the name was we kind of got all set up and ready to go and then, you know, discovered, oops, it's spelled a little bit differently, but there is actually a VolCon Star Trek gaming convention somewhere in the Midwest or something. But because we're in a completely different area of influence dealing with gaming, you know, whereas that's related to a television show, we figured people, once they started to see our branding, they'd figure out what was going on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that the reasoning to have the dash between the Vol and the Con?
Part of that, yes.
Yeah, it helped.
So as far as the Phoenix Convention Center, how much room do you have set aside for the convention?
It's pretty big. It's 30,000 square feet of space. That space will encompass everything that's going on with the event. For this first time out, we're really trying to bring everything into a single giant space. try to keep the traffic flowing. So rather than having, you know, separate rooms where there's different activities going on, we'll be breaking it up a little bit with set pieces and decoration. But the dealer space will be in there. All the gaming table space will be in there. And we're really running most of our non-specifically play-related programming through an area we like to call the Gamer's Lounge, which is where we're kind of creating sort of a crash space where, you know, gamers can go either hang out together if nothing's going on there. But, you know, if we have guests that are, you know, going to go ahead and have a sit and chat with the attendees, then they have that opportunity to go over there. And that's where they engage in a more casual atmosphere instead of that sort of stage and peon setup that you typically see at trade shows and conventions and things like that.
As far as some of the exhibitors or guests that you have lined up for the show, what can you share with us at this point?
Well, we're still, you know, obviously we're still, 7 months out. And so we're still finalizing some folks. We've had a lot of interest and we're just kind of working out details at this point. Some of the folks that we know for a fact that are going to be in attendance, a lot of them are local, but one of them, one of our favorites so far, just because of the distances involved, makes it kind of fun. As Jeff knows, he was out at our arena too. And at that event, we did sort of our test drive with Skype, and we Skyped in Andrea Angiolino. Did I get that right?
I think so.
Yeah. So hopefully I didn't muck up his name and he hears this and doesn't want to be a guest. But we actually Skyped him in for about 6 or 8 Wings of War fans that were, you know, they're playing Wings of War. And had a really nice, what we call virtual guest experience. And it worked out really nicely, we think. And so we're planning to do more of that at the main event. So he's actually the first virtual guest on our docket. And Rick spoke with him this week and he's on board for the main convention to do that. Great. So a lot of the big name people that we'll probably have, game designers and whatnot, that's how we'll bring them in. We really wanted to test it before we started hitting more people. We don't have a lot of them lined up yet, but what's difficult for us is when you're new, you've got to figure out where you're going to put your effort and your resources. And for us, we wanted to procure a really nice space, have a lot of it, so that way it's there for need and to be able to have a lot of things going on, and focus on sort of the preparation for the space, the set pieces, the things that are going to make it a fun event. And we want to have great guests, but what we didn't want to do is take all of the money that we're investing into this and put it into flying people in from all over the world. So, you know, as we grow and move on, we may do more of that. But for this first one, a lot of the bigger name people we're going to bring in virtually that way to keep that portion of our costing model down. But then there's a lot of people that are local. We actually just had a gentleman, and unfortunately, I don't have his name on the tip of my tongue, but he's a small press publisher, publishes his own game. And he wanted to come out and do some talks with the citizens in attendance at the event. So, you know, we just signed him on as a guest probably 2 weeks ago. And so he'll be actually driving in from California. You know, Phoenix is kind of like the mini Midwest for gaming. And so there's actually some pretty significant folks locally, mm-hmm. and we're looking to tap into that as well. And so got Todd Van Hoosier, who's been very supportive of our events, that's going to be out there as a guest, and he'll be running things. You know, he runs the Adventures Under the Laughing Moon RPG and has written some books in that same world. And so there are some folks like that that are very interested in being involved and being guests. But a lot of that's going to flesh itself out more probably over the next 3 to 4 months. We'll be able to make a lot more announcements about who the other attendees will be.
You mentioned that this is going to be the first Volcon. Am I correct? It's been a while since there was a large-scale convention here in the Phoenix area, am I right?
Yeah, it's been, I believe, 2009 was the last one. There was a convention called RandomCon that I believe ran in 2008, 2009. Prior to that, there was Phoenix Con Games that ran for a few years. And prior to that, the big gaming convention in the Valley was called Hexacon. You know, there's gaming at a lot of the sci-fi events in the area, but the focus isn't on gaming. Like, we attended Phoenix Comic Con a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They had a really, you know,
it was great.
Yeah, it was a great gaming space. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of fun things happening there. And they did a nice job with it, but that was an offshoot of a comic convention.
Right.
When I say sadly, no disrespect to the Phoenix Comic Con folks, they did a great job. But what was sad about it to us was in 2011, That is the only large-scale gaming event that occurred in the Valley. It's probably the biggest gaming event in the Valley. I mean, strangely enough, for 2011, our Arena 2 was like the second largest gaming event in the Valley, which was supposed to be our mini convention.
Wow.
And so there's really this dearth of gaming events or of large-scale gaming events here, and that's really the void that we were looking to fill and create some opportunity. But beyond that, we really want to turn this into a destination for the southwestern United States first, mm-hmm. and then eventually a national destination convention. There's really, Phoenix is a huge metropolitan city, and there's really, and with a gorgeous convention center like we've got downtown. And if we're doing it in February instead of the traditional summertime for gaming, Phoenix is a vacation destination. Right. There's no reason not to leverage all of that and bring people in from all over the country and all over the world to come vacation here, enjoy our beautiful climate in February, March timeframe, and attend, you know, a world-class gaming event.
Here's something I'm interested in. You guys, well, you woke up one day and you decided you're going to put together a convention in this area. What's the process for actually putting something like this together? There's got to be a lot of work involved. How did you know how to put this together? What have you gone through?
Jay and I both have different skill sets. My day job, I own and operate a small advertising print and sign company. So the promotional aspect of any kind of thing similar to this, I'm very familiar with and I've been doing for 22 years. I also have access to a lot of tools and equipment that allows us to reduce costs for instead of jobbing stuff out to do where we pay top dollar. We do it all in-house. And Jay, as you can tell already, is more of our public relations type person. He's more of the face of AllCon. He deals with the human aspect of it. And he's done things of this in the past. I've helped a bit with hobby type related events like this in Vegas some years ago. And really just the desire to do it is the reason why we did it. There really isn't anything more.
At some point along the way, we were just shy of accused of nefarious designs. You know, why are we so secretive and whatnot? And I think people who've come out to our small events are like going, wow, these guys really aren't secretive at all. They're pretty approachable.
But they are nefarious, I have to point out. When I
there is probably nefarious, you know, underpinnings to it. We ourselves are kept in the dark about those. So we have them sealed in an envelope so that way we don't even know what we're up to. But as Rick said, you know, for both of us, we've done similar types of things in the past and we've been involved with similar events. And one of the things I think's helped me out a little bit is I actually ran a charity event here over a 3-day Thanksgiving weekend. It was actually a gaming 72-hour game-a-thon, which was one of the first events like this that I was involved in setting up, mm-hmm. and then ran a small convention in Flagstaff many years ago, a general science fiction convention called CraterCon. A friend and I did both of those together, and they were fairly successful for being small events, and didn't really learn a lot of what to do from that, but learned a lot of what not to do. And Rick knew a lot of what not to do. So this whole process has been a combination of knowing what not to do and then saying, where is it written that we have to do things the way everyone's always done them? And so one of the things that we've taken a lot of flack over, to be quite honest, is that we're trying to shake things up. And, you know, we're not trying to totally redo gaming. Like, we're going to have a gaming convention where nobody games. You know, we're not doing something crazy like that.
But, avant-garde.
Yeah, exactly. It's like everyone comes and stares at each other and we charge you $50 to get in. But what we're actually doing is we're trying to think of some different things that we've either seen at other trade shows we've attended. We've had a lot of influence on us from attending the San Diego Comic Cons, you know, sort of that big hype engine type of environment is kind of what we want to do to build excitement and energy. It's why there's large set pieces like at our Arena 2. You know, there was a portion of a Quonset hut while on display. At Arena 1, there was a statue of Vulcan there that'll eventually be in a temple of Vulcan that'll greet you as you enter the main convention in 2012. So, you know, we're really trying to make it something. You know, we've called it San Diego Comic-Con for gamers. We've called it Disneyland for gamers. You know, really, we're trying to create a more immersive experience, and we're trying to do some new and creative things. And that's not a diss on anything anybody else is doing or has done. We just want to shake things up a little bit and do them differently and create a great experience for our attendees. And we've gotten a lot of feedback from people that even with our small events, that's how they're feeling. But we've also gotten some weird reactions, you know, from folks that are sort of, they've been involved with the gaming convention scene for years, and they'll come up to us and say things like, well, you can't do that. Why are you doing that that way? You know, that just doesn't work. And we're like, well, you know, these 10 people think they had an awesome time doing it, so we're going to stick with it.
I know you both need to be fairly politically correct. I don't.
We've noticed that.
Yes. Well, that's another discussion for another time, but that's okay. Yes, we have opinions and we like to voice them. Just the short time that I was at Arena 2 and the experiences I've had going to conventions, even smaller ones, weekend conventions or game days, things like that, I got the impression that you both have seen what's gone on in the Valley previously. There's a reason why there hasn't been a convention that's taken off and lasted 20 years in the Phoenix Valley. I have the impression that you're sitting there saying, you know what, we're going to make this different because we want to be here for the long haul. And it doesn't matter if so-and-so who's been involved in the hobby out here doesn't think it's a good idea. We're going to stick to our guns and go with what we think is going to work.
Yeah, that's true. And we're trying to serve a broader audience. I think that's really a big piece of our push. We've attended them. We've even attended a few together. And, you know, one of the things that we've walked away from some of that, and even some of the, well, gee, we didn't even know this one was going on. We might have checked it out. What we learned, and we learned this also fairly early on with our own events, it's really hard to reach that person out there who really enjoys playing games, but isn't necessarily connected to the gaming scene, for a lack of a better term.
No, yeah, that's about right. I would say that's how I'd put it.
And so for us, we want to bring those people into the fold too. You know, we've been those folks for a number of years. When Rick and I first started gaming together, our thought was, well, why would we drag ourselves down to a game store to sit and play games? When we were 16, that would have just rocked our world, but it wasn't really available then. Right. You know, then game stores were little holes in the wall, and you went and hoped what you wanted was on the rack and got out, got on a bus and went home. But then, you know, you're in your parents' house and you could have used a place to go. But for us as adults with our own homes and whatnot, you know, our kitchens are really close to a refrigerator with ice cold drinks in them. Mm-hmm. And a nice table to sit at and play games. So why would we play with our local group of friends in our own homes? So what is it that's going to draw people out and get them, you know, to go to events? And just having a room with tables in it and people playing games probably isn't going to pull that off. And so, and that's been, you know, no disrespect to what other folks have done, but right. That's by and large our experience with other gaming events. We'll get a bunch of round or rectangular tables and we'll set them in a room. And, you know, if we set tables out, they will come. We're struggling a little bit to do it because sometimes the spaces we're working in won't let us put a lot of decorations and things out just because our space is limited.
Right.
But really trying to change that a bit and make sure we've got some events that are very visually appealing. That's why the giant hippodrome, you know, that's why the big Colosseum battle. That's why eventually we're going to have our third, what we call our Ludi Vulcani games, our Vulcan games, which are our big Roman theme pieces. We're going to have our giant trireme Roman sea battle. I mean, that was for us to have some baseline games like that. But we're also, we've got a lot of other things in the works like that. And as we work with other groups, we call our volunteers senators. And those senators are people who come and run games for us. And as we work with those groups, one of the things we're trying to do is build enhancements for them. And one of our huge advantages is having Rick on the team, because he has the ability to create those things. I could never in a million years create them. You know, the people ask me about stuff and the joke is, well, yeah, Rick designed this all and, you know, did most of the construction, and I basically just showed up and sanded some stuff and drove in some nails at a bad angle that he had to pull out and put back in. So, but really what we're trying to do is have even those senators that come and run games for us, give them some better tools to do it with. So that's why you see the really gorgeous game mats that Rick produces for our events and, you know, custom pieces. Like when we did our Wings of War event this last time, You know, we had some sort of weird end of the war concept piece planes that were worked into Wings of War, like the American Flying Pancake and the German, probably going to pronounce it wrong, Triebflugel.
Triebflugel.
Yeah. And then Rick and I got to go see Captain America Friday night. And we were just so blown away because I'm like, hey, Rick, you hunted down this Triebflugel and now it's in the Captain America. How'd you predict that? You know, but, you know, we're really trying to capture these trends and steampunk and diesel punk and some of the stuff that we see out there that's interesting and fun and work them into these gaming experiences that people are having. So when they come to a Volcon event, whether it be one of our mini cons like an arena or whether it be the big one, and especially at the big one, you know, there will be some games that you play that are just the same way you could have played them in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. But there will also be quite a number of games where you will either get to see or do or experience things that you're not going to have at home. And so there's a reason to get out of your kitchen or your dining room and get in your car and drive down and go down to the Phoenix Convention Center or go down to Imperial Outpost Games Manaworks or Samurai Comics or Gamers Inn, wherever we're holding one of these events, and actually give up your day to come game with us. Because when you leave at the end of the day, you're going to say, wow, that was pretty cool. I got to do some things or play some things I wouldn't have gotten to play otherwise.
And I've got to go hit that convention when it's in February.
And plus, there is another thing that we're doing. You earn points as the more you participate. And if you win with your trophies and medals and things of that nature that you get at our events, we have an online leaderboard, which is just about ready to be released. And there will be a Gamer of the Year award and a second place Ludi Balkany of the Year award. So you're actually working towards something as well. And the more events you attend, the more credit you're going to get and the more chance you have of taking home those awards.
You not only earn for being in attendance at an event, but you also earn for what you play in. And so you know, the more games you play, the more points you get as well. If you win tournaments, you get bonus points. Part of the experience we want people to have is that they also feel like, you know, they've been rewarded for attending the events. And so that's why you probably noticed at our arena events, we do raffles. We'll be doing even more raffles at our big event. We also have some pretty nice prizes for the games that are tournaments. We give out medals in addition to that for the arena events. For the large event, there's actually really nice, there's pictures of them on our website, but there's really nice statue awards that you get that are basically have our anvil sitting atop them. And there's a gold, silver, and bronze level of award. So, you know, we're not necessarily trying to force people to be in a great big competition with each other, but we're kind of creating a meta game out of the whole convention circuit. And while we started out with the notion of we'd run these mini cons as a way to, as Rick always says, pack 4 years of, you know, marketing our convention into a single year as best we can. Part of what started to arise out of that once we started going with it is that we sort of have Volcon seasons instead of just one big convention. Correct. And so, you know, you're going to have a series of arenas that you can attend as part of that season, and they lead up to a larger convention. Eventually, part of those seasons is going to include tournament qualifiers that will determine, you know, for some of the tournaments at the main event, you know, who are the people that get to play in that big playoff. And we've got some really neat things going with the game stores locally. There's one thing I can't talk a lot about yet because it hasn't been fully worked out. But for Magic the Gathering, there's this concept of a grudge match that's being developed, you know, where we're going to actually pit the stores against each other. So a store will, you know, a store will have the state trophy or the Southwestern trophy as this thing grows. And so we're trying to get the gamers involved. We're trying to get them rewarded for attending the events, trying to create a unique experience for them. And we're trying to do the same thing with the stores and the retailers too. One of the odd things about gaming and gaming conventions, particularly in Arizona, I don't know how it is other places, but there's been traditionally fairly limited involvement by the game stores themselves. Mm-hmm. And as you talk to game store owners, it kind of goes back and forth. Some of it's because some of them really aren't interested, which we get. If they don't want to be interested, they don't have to be involved. But some of it has been that some of the convention folks haven't really tried to involve them. And that's not all of them. I mean, that's a generalization. Some have. But really, our goal is to try to help those store owners as well to get their name out there. Sure. And get some exposure also. And it's really just a big partnership. You know, no individual group or person can grow the hobby by themselves. It's going to take a lot of people being out there. And so it takes the stores and people like us that are running events and people like you guys who are running a site to get information out there and reviews and evaluations. And so we kind of all need to be, I don't know if we have to necessarily be working in sync, but we have to at least be cooperating to some extent. If we're working at cross purposes to each other, you know, we're never going to grow the hobby. We're just going to fragment it, and we're going to end up with less people playing games. And what's best for all of us who love games is for more people to be playing them.
Oh, most definitely.
It sounds like it's a lot of not adult oriented, but for grownups.
Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. Rick, you should see.
Are you guys going to have anything planned for the wee ones?
You know, it's funny. We are. That was always in our works. And we've done a little bit of dabbling with that at our arenas. We haven't done a spectacular job with it. If there's an area where we've been weak, that may be the area. But it's actually worked out fairly well. At our first event, Fantasy Flight Games was kind enough to set us up with some copies of their Rattlesnake game, which is from their toy line of games. Mm-hmm. And we actually, we didn't plan an event around it, but we noticed a couple of young kids showed up. So we actually set them up playing that, and they had an absolute blast. And it didn't happen. Sometimes you have these lucky turns of circumstance, but it didn't happen, you know, through any effort on our part. But during the raffles, one of the things we were giving away was a Rattlesnake game. And the person who won it was the dad of one of the really little girls who was playing it, who absolutely loved it. So she was just ecstatic. So when things work out that way, you just got to smile and go, the universe is working in our direction right now. At Arena 2, we had two really interesting things happen. One was we had a lull point where things quieted down at the Circus Maximus at the big Hippodrome event. And the guy who's been running that for us, Stuart Collins, I think is Stuart, his name. Yeah. Awesome guy. But he's like, hey, I want to run some people through. Allison, Rick's wife, who also is part of the team here and was helping with the event, went around and rounded up all the kids that were at the event and got three of them to commit to coming over and playing. And those three kids played Circus Maximus and had, I was watching them, they had an absolute blast doing it. And one of the kids' fathers, who was actually one of our senators, came over to me later in the day and confided to me that, you know, he's dragged his kid to a lot of these different gaming events around town, and drag's a bad word, because he said he loves coming. He loves the crowd. He loves the feeling of being there, but has just never felt comfortable to become engaged in playing a game. And so at Arena 2 was the first time that he was engaged and played a game and had an absolute blast, which that made me feel really good. Yeah. On top of that, we had a father and son team that were playing in both our Dust Tactics, and we talked them into also playing in our Wings of War World War II tournament, because the two were linked to each other. That was another unusual thing we did, you know, cross-linking two different games together as a joint tournament. And they ended up being the grand champions. The players played in pairs of two, and dad and son were one of the teams. And when we went into the final round, they were undefeated and another team was undefeated. And in that final showdown, they came out victorious. And so they went completely undefeated for the whole tournament. And dad and his son ended up, you know, being the grand champions of that tournament. And I got an email earlier this week, day or two ago, I had shot some photos over to them of them with their prizes. And the father said, yeah, I just recently finally got my son to take the medal off. He's been wearing it all. So we're seeing some of that start to come out naturally from the events, because we really try to be family and kid friendly. But one of the things we're going to do a better and better job of is building some events that are very specifically oriented towards engaging kids. And for that, what we're going to do is use some of the games that, you know, are going to be a little bit more approachable and easier for kids to become involved with, like, you know, HeroScape and some things like that that are out there, you know, that might be games that are visually appealing and fun to play, but don't have a giant hefty tome of rules that you have to memorize to get started. In addition to that, but what's funny, and this is kind of an irony, is meanwhile, these kids played Circus Maximus, which is an old Avalon Hill game, which a lot of people, a lot of adults consider those more complex games, but those kids rocked. They had no problem learning it at all. A lot of times we adults think, oh, this will be too tough for kids. But if you can engage them, they can pretty much grasp and do just about anything.
Now, you guys have mentioned that Hippodrome a couple times now, and I haven't seen it because I didn't get to go. Can you describe it?
Well, it's 22 feet long and 7.5 feet wide. It's a little, the actual towers and gatehouse in the back are a bit wider. They're closer to 8 feet. It is at the absolute limit of what you can reach into the center to play. I wanted to make something very grandiose, and it ended up being a bit bigger than I expected due to the size of the chariot models we got. But it's one of our neatest pieces. It's really neat.
And one of the little, I don't know if it's like Vulcan Apocrypha or stories or whatever, but one of the real funny stories that we sometimes share with people when they ask about how large it is when it was originally being assembled just as a test assembly, outside of Rick's house on his patio. It actually, he has a very large patio and it hung off the edge of the patio. We had my son, because you asked about kids, and I have a 10-year-old son. So obviously kids is a priority for me to get them gaming. But we actually, you know, had him hop up there and go, oh, this is cool, and start running laps in the Hippodrome. So, you know, a 10-year-old running laps in this thing gives you a sense, it's pretty immense.
You understand the numbers when we say 22 feet and 7.5 feet, but actually until you really see it in person, you don't really get a full idea of its size.
It is impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah, it even fools us because, well, even when we go to set it up, we're like, okay, we should be okay for space here. And then once we get to building it, it's like, yeah, it's even bigger than we ever remember it.
Yeah, and that's the cool. Trireme game will be bigger yet.
You're actually going to fill up a huge tub with water and a huge tank.
If we could figure out a way to pull that off, we probably would. Yeah.
Yeah, I would do it. But no, it's actually going to be played on the floor.
We're going to create a sort of virtual ocean on the floor, a virtual bay. The triremes themselves are fairly sizable, and one of our volunteers will basically be inside the harbor or the bay or the ocean with the ships, taking care of movement so these things don't get stomped on.
Right.
And the captains of the ships will stand at the outer edge and sort of shout out their orders to have their ship movements made by that volunteer. It's not going to be maybe as impressive in the construction as the Hippodrome is, but it will certainly be the largest game at the event.
Yes.
Are there any just final thoughts that either Rick or Jay you'd like to toss out about Vulcan or the upcoming arena that's coming up in December?
The only thing I can think is if you're interested in coming to the arena in December, we will have registration up probably by the end of the month, and you'll want to sign up early. We're expecting more people than we had at Arena 2. And the space is going to be a little more constrictive than it was at Imperial, so we're likely to reach capacity a lot quicker.
Yeah, and that's been probably one of our big challenges, has been getting people to pre-register. I mean, we have had quite a bit of pre-registration, but we have a lot of walk-in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we'd really like to see people do is get on the site and pre-register either for the main event, or if they don't feel comfortable doing that, pre-register for Arena 3. Come out, see what we do in a small venue. If you see it, you'll be impressed, and it'll give you an opportunity to register for the big event. And what we always do with our arenas is we charge $10 to come and play, and it's a, you know, kind of a mini buy to try before you buy the big amount. But what we do is we give you a code that you can then use to get that $10 as a discount on your main convention attendance. And when we talked about everything being seasons, one thing people need to be aware of is if they buy their membership to the big convention, they get all of the arena events leading up to that for free. So one of the things we'll be selling in February at the main convention is the next season of Vulcan. And if people go ahead and purchase that, then what they'll get is every single arena that follows that Vulcan 2012 up to and including that big Vulcan 2013 event. And mm-hmm. so you actually get quite a bit more for your money than just the main convention, which is kind of nice. And the main reason we want to get people pre-registering is one of the things we do is we survey them in the registration. One of the things we're doing, what we feel is differently, originally gaming conventions in the Valley never even asked you, you know, was this good, bad, or indifferent? They just did what they thought was the right thing to do to the best of their ability. Then in recent years, they've done post-convention evaluations so that way they could get better as they went on. But what we've really tried to do is get out ahead of it, and we're actually querying folks for what they like to play, what they want to see, what they want to do, how they want to see it, how they want to do it. We're doing all that up front. We'll follow up with them after the fact to see how it worked for them and what more we can do to improve. But if folks don't pre-register and they don't take that survey, we don't have a way to know what it is that they want. And I think as Jeff saw when he came out to our small event, it's a very customer service driven way that we're handling this. And our goal is to make sure there's something for everyone, but we can't make sure there's something there for you unless you tell us what it is. And the only way we have to capture that and know you're serious about attending, so we should put the energy and effort into it, is if you sign up in advance.
Okay, I have one final question. Will you be offering, instead of t-shirts for sale, togas?
It's funny you should ask.
We are actually working on a design for our con t-shirts that I'm not going to let you in on what it's like, but you will have to see to believe. And if you want to wear a toga, if you're coming out as our guest and you're going to be an honorary senator anyway, you're more than welcome to do so.
I'm wearing one now, so that'd be fine.
Yeah, we will have some people dressed up. There will be some costuming involved. One of the things we did as a promo at Phoenix Comic Con was we've got a couple of gentlemen and a lady who dress up as two Roman centurions and a Roman lady, and they were kind of out doing marketing for us on the floor at Phoenix Comic Con. They will be out there. That Legio Vulcani will actually grow. There'll probably be more of them by then, so they'll be wandering around helping with the experience there. We'll have folks in togas and all that kind of good stuff. But this con shirt concept that Rick and Allison have developed is really pretty awesome. And so once we get prototypes together, we'll be showing them, but we're still kind of in the works to get that done.
Okay.
Fantastic. Well, Rick and Jay, thank you very much for taking time out on this Sunday morning to chat with Elliot and I about Vulcan and the upcoming show, February 25th and 26th of 2012. What is the date for Arena 3 that's going to be at Samurai Comics in Phoenix?
Yeah, Arena 3 is December 10th of 2011, and it's going to be at Samurai. Actually has two locations. It's going to be at their Camelback and roughly 10th Street location.
All right. Awesome. Well, we will look forward to, I'm trying to talk Elliot into flying out for Vulcan next year, but I'm sure you will see me at Arena 3.
Sounds great. If he flies out, we will be certain to show him a good time.
You heard it.
Most definitely.
Cool. Thanks a lot, guys. It was great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Take care.
There you have it. I'd like to once again thank Jay Mann and Rick Ivansack for taking time to share their thoughts about Vulcan 2012. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Victory Point Games. Visit their site at victorypointgames.com. And be sure to join Elliot and Jeff on our next edition of The Gaming Gang for our news, views, and reviews. Until then, thanks for listening.